Our text this morning is, as was mentioned, Psalm 139. In May and June, we had a couple of sermons on the Psalms. Our idea was to have a season of sermons focusing on the Psalms. Of course, May and June is that time of year that's loaded with other important church events, baptism, Pentecost, Ascension, Mother's Day, Father's Day, and so on. And so we felt like the Psalms didn't get quite fair treatment during that time. Mike Dirksen gave us a good look at six of the praise Psalms, and what I really appreciated was that he actually read all six of those Psalms with us that morning. So I think we only had two sermons during that time. So we decided that after the summer, now the summer, of course, was our travels with the Apostle Paul, and that was partly in keeping with the idea that everybody travels in summertime, and so you had your travels, but all of that is finished now, right? We went with the Apostle Paul to visit seven of the churches to whom he wrote letters as follow-up. My question is, in your travels over the summer, did you visit other churches? Did anybody? Raise your hands. Yeah, there are hands. Good. Maybe in your campsite you had your own church service. It's encouraging, encouraging to other churches when they receive visitors, and it's also always enlightening and enriching when we travel that we visit other churches, see how they do things, worship with other believers. Anyway, that was the summer. Now we've decided to give the Psalms another little more fair treatment. And so I'm hoping that between now and Thanksgiving that maybe you will decide to read the book of Psalms. There are 150 of them. You'll have to read a little more than one a day to get through, but some of them are very short. We have said before that the Psalms became the hymn book of the Hebrew community. If you look in the Bible, if you look at, for instance, Psalms 120 to 134, all of them short ones, probably like our choruses that we sing in church, they're headed by the words, a song of ascents. And so from 120 to 134, there are 14 short psalms that the people sang as they walked up to the temple on the Sabbath to worship. And so they were ascending, they were songs of ascents. Many of the psalms were written as personal prayers, expressing a full range of emotions, from praise to petition, from blessing to cursing, from joy to lament, to vengeance against enemies, to feelings of despair and abandonment. Even the very personal ones become the sacred songs of the corporate community. And so we took a little bit of liberty this morning in the call to worship, which comes from Psalm 139, the last three verses. Instead of using the singular pronouns me and my, we changed it to us and our to fit our corporate worship. And so my suggestion is that whenever we sing the choruses that appear on our screen here, that even though they have personal pronouns like I and me and my and so on, that we think corporately when we use them, that we think us and our. The psalmist very much had that intent. In our own hymn book, which we don't use, but thank you to Kevin for leading us choosing a number of the hymns that are from our hymn book this morning. And I'm not sure whether that will show up on the screen, but there is a page in the back of the hymn book that shows that there are at least 163 hymns in our hymn book that have a reference to the Psalms. It's no problem if that doesn't work. Anyway, 163 of the hymns have a reference to the Psalms. We have an example in Psalm 5, verses 1 to 3, where the psalmist says, "Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my sighing. Listen to my cry for help, my King and my God. For to you I pray." Very personal, and yet they were meant for corporate worship. If I would ask which psalms are your favorites, likely you would list Psalm 23, but probably not Psalm 22, and yet they sort of stand as a package side by side. Psalm 22 is, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from my groaning? And Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And so you have those sort of contrasting feelings, emotions. You would probably name Psalm 1, blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, and so on. You would probably name Psalm 46, the Lord is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Psalm 121, I will lift up my eyes to the hills, from whence comes my help. Psalm 19, the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. Psalm 103, I'm drawing a blank. Psalm 91, Psalm 139, I hope that those are favorites, but I hope that you have favorites in the book of Psalms that just come to mind. Perhaps you would say it depends on the occasion or even on your mood. Philip Yancey says it's a little bit like a spiritual medicine cabinet. If you feel depressed, read Psalm 37. If your health is failing, try Psalm 121. And then he adds that such an approach never worked for him. Invariably, he would land on a psalm that aggravated his problem instead of curing it. Another writer judges that at least half the psalms are wintry in tone. And he says if he accidentally turned to one of them, he would end up feeling frostily depressed. For instance, Psalm 90, where we read, "You sweep men away in the sleep of death. We are consumed by your anger. Our span of 70 or 80 years is but trouble and sorrow." As Philip Yancey admits, he was concerned about his bad attitude. So he determined to correct that by spending 1 month every morning driving out into the beautiful wilderness in the mountains in Colorado and reading 10 psalms in a row. And it didn't help. He said, "I would read Psalm 8, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars." Just wonderful, drawing our attention to God's beautiful creation. And what is man that you are mindful of him? But then he would get to Psalm 10. And Psalm 10 says, "Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?" And then Yancey says he felt like being swept along on an emotional roller coaster. So he suggests it's most profitable to read the Psalms not as systematic theology, but as a sampling of spiritual journals, much like personal letters to God, in the form of poetry, but designed as corporate prayers. We don't read the Psalms like we do the Gospels or Paul's letters. These are meant to give us instruction about God, about faith, about the Christian life, about body life in the church. Poetry is rather meant to offer images, pictures, stories that connect us with the realities of life. It depicts the struggles and, yeah, many of the prayer requests this morning are struggles. The Psalms depict the struggles that we often have with trying to square what we believe about God with what we actually experience. More than anything, the Psalms display what an open and honest relationship with God looks like. The writers have no need to clean up their thoughts or words, their attitudes, even their weaknesses and failures before coming to speak to God. They are open with their joys, their praises, their petitions, their anguish, their doubts and fears. Philip Yancey reflects on the little childhood prayer that he learned before a meal. God is great, God is good. Let us thank him for the food. As he got a little older, he started wondering about those words. God is great. How come there are the Joseph Stalins, the Hitlers, the Idi Amins, and all we need to do is listen to the news these days, and we say, God, in your greatness, couldn't you stop some of this, some of the brutal things that people are doing to others? God is great. God is good. And then he says, how come you let my dad die before he reached age 30? He had the potential to be a missionary for you. I didn't even get to know him. Let us thank him for our food. Well, what about all those people who are starving? Interesting that in most of the cases where the writer expresses anxieties, fears in the Psalms, the writer ends up with a verse of praise and assurance that God is present, that he is faithful. And so Philip Yancey calls it soul therapy, a way of talking oneself into faith when the emotions are wavering. Sort of like the man in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, in Mark chapter 9, who has brought his son to Jesus to be freed from his constant convulsions. And Jesus asks the man if he believes. And the man replies, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. I think that is our experience, isn't it? We believe, and yet we look around or we experience things and we wonder, is God great? Is God good? Yes, he is. Why don't we always experience it? I don't know. And so we want to go to Psalm 139 this morning, a devotional classic, sometimes called a lament, and we want to read it. O Lord, you have searched me, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Verse 7, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. If only you would slay the wicked, O God, away from me, you bloodthirsty men. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord, and abhor those who rise up against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. You took note of the personal pronouns, you, me, my. It's an intimate dialogue, a conversation with God. Now we shouldn't do much too much with poetry and taking it apart. As English teachers, we always did too much of that. It should just be read and enjoyed, but I'm going to take this one apart a little bit for us this morning. First of all, O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. When you get to the airport, into the security area, and you are asked to take off your jacket and certainly to empty your pockets and maybe even to take off your shoes, you feel a bit vulnerable. You are being searched, scanned. You feel suspected. Do you ever feel like saying, sir, this shouldn't be necessary. I'm the part-time interim pastor of La Crete Christian Fellowship, and those people trust me. I hope they do. Don't I look like I'm an honest person? But you don't say that, right? You, of course, just follow protocol. You step into that narrow gate, and then you hope that no beeping sounds will disturb the moment, right? And I have a little story to tell you. I think it's okay. With all due respect to my father-in-law, and I love him and respect him dearly, but for all the years that I have known him, he has always had a jackknife in his pocket, whether he preaches or whether he farms, because you never know when you're going to need a jackknife. And a few years back, when he was still more or less in control of his faculties, he had to fly to Winnipeg, and so out of Saskatoon. And we told him, Dad, you better leave your jackknife at home. And it's like a comb in the pocket. You know, I'm not fully dressed unless I have a comb in my pocket. He is not fully dressed without his jackknife. I said, Dad, you can't take your jackknife on the airplane. Oh, well, I'll just put it in my shoe. Dad, then you won't even get on the airplane. Then you'll be led to the back and maybe handcuffed, and somebody's going to have to pick you up. Well, wouldn't you know it, he made the trip, and when he came back, of course, we weren't around anymore when he came back, but later on we asked, so did you leave your jackknife at home? No, I put it in my shoe. And he got away with it. Most of us wouldn't. But it's not just an amusing story. How many of us hide jackknives in our shoes, things that we really would like to hide from God, right? Search me, O God. How many of us are carrying a jackknife in the shoe, and for how long are we going to get away with it? Being searched could conjure up many other images: police searches, job application searches, internet searches. To be searched can feel like an invasion of our privacy. Others might find out things that we would rather hide, like the jackknives in our shoes. The poet in this psalm doesn't seem threatened, though. That's the interesting thing to me. According to verse 6, his response to being searched and being known by God simply leaves him in wonder and awe. It's not threatened. Verse 6 says, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain." It is a reverent awe at the mystery of such an all-knowing God. All my daily comings and goings, even my thoughts and words that I am about to say, God knows. And then I ask myself, I'm not sure that I want God to know all my thoughts, my motives, my attitudes. Sometimes they are simply unholy. And I assume that I'm not the only one. And then I read this psalm and learn that there's actually security and protection and blessing in being held so close by this all-knowing God. Verse 5 says, "You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me," but not as someone who is as a policeman controlling or hemming you in, but rather a sense of security, a sense of protection, a sense of blessing. I think that's how we need to understand God's searching and knowing. Verses 7 to 12. This all-knowing God is everywhere present. At first glance, it almost sounds like the poet is wishing to escape from God's presence, because he says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence?" But that is actually a bit of a misread. In keeping with the broader tone of this psalm, I think it's his way of acknowledging God's omnipresence, present everywhere, and again finding security in that. In John chapter 4, Jesus says to the Samaritan woman, "God is spirit." Here the psalmist says it as well. Since God is spirit, he can be present everywhere at the same time. Present among the farthest galaxies light years away, and present on all sides of this tiny ball in the universe that we call Earth. And so the psalmist says in verse 9, "On the wings of the dawn, over in the east, to the far side of the sea," which is always, for Israel, that was always west. In Psalm 103, verse 12, we read, "As far as the east is from the west, so far does he remove our transgressions from us." So the writers, the poetry writers especially, they used east and west to describe the unfathomable distance, because east never meets west, right? East and west, there's no limit. You can keep going east, and you can keep going east, or you can go west and west and west, right? They never meet at any point like north and south do. And so there is no limit to God's presence, is that poet's way of saying it. And then verse 10, the psalmist finds security in that knowledge. Again, he says, "Even there, your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast." Verses 13 to 16. "God, you know everything about me because you made me." Not only is God creator of the universe, he is also our personal creator. Since even before we were born, we were in God's hands, and the psalmist again finds a reason to praise God. I don't think the psalmist is here giving us specific answers as to when the embryo becomes a person, That is the whole debate, the whole abortion debate. Rather, this is a poetic description of the fact that since God created us right from the beginning, that makes life sacred. And that should speak into all the issues about the taking of another's life. It should speak into our question about abortion, about capital punishment, about killing in war, about doctor-assisted suicide, about euthanasia, even some of the very complicated end-of-life decisions. Is life sacred or isn't it? And I don't suggest that this makes those decisions easy, but it needs to provide the basis for our thinking. If God is the creator of life, that makes life sacred. Now, how do we answer all these other questions that come to bear? The other truth here is that this provides us all with a remarkable basis for self-worth. This prenatal fashioning is God's doing, and it should remind us of our worth to God. And if we ever are tempted to think of ourselves as not worth very much, then we need to read this again, this section, and say, yeah, God created me. The psalmist is not writing medical science here, nor does he give us an answer to why not all babies are born without physical defects. That reality is around us, even as we heard in the prayer reminders today. In this fallen world, not every baby is perfectly formed. But I think we don't take this psalm to therefore find room to judge anyone. And in fact, Jesus has that teaching for us in John chapter 8. This is a poetic description proclaiming God's creative power and presence. The psalmist's praise continues. He even sounds surprised. If you look at verse 18, he says, "When I awake, I am still with you." Almost surprised that when he wakes up in the morning, God is still there. That should be reassuring, right? And then we get to that section, verses 19 to 22, which seems to be totally out of place in this psalm, right? It's a bit of a jarring kind of intrusion, and I always smile with some relief when I get to this part. Relief because I also find myself quite capable of having such feelings. There are wicked people in this world, and why doesn't God in his omnipotence just remove them? In fact, maybe we should help him along a little bit once in a while. And then we are reminded of other verses like Proverbs 24:17. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls. If we read this psalm as a prayer to God, I like to think that for a moment the psalmist's mind wanders into some unholy thoughts. And he says, oh, there are these wicked people, these people that should just be taken out of the way. Does that ever happen to you? I think, and there is also such a thing as righteous anger, and so maybe sometimes we can couch our angry thoughts in righteous anger. Sometimes I think we just admit that our mind wanders, and this is a prayer, and I think the writer's mind has wandered. And then he comes back to verse 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Are we willing to say this prayer with the psalmist? Search me. Check out my actions. Check out my thoughts, my attitudes, my motives. In fact, test me. Not only search me, but test me. Well, don't make the test too hard. I'm not sure how many times in my life I answered that question when tests were being handed out, is this a hard test? just depends, right? We would like the tests not to be too hard. But the psalmist says, test me. And then he says, I really want you to correct any offensive way in me. See if there's any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. I hope that we are able to pray that prayer, those last two verses, as a personal prayer for ourselves and then for us as a corporate worshiping body. How open are we and how willing are we to have God search us? We may as well be willing because he knows everything anyway. We don't need to hide any jackknives in our shoes. I would invite you to take the call to worship and read it together in closing as our closing prayer. Let's read it together. Search us, O God, and know our hearts. Test us and know our anxious thoughts, and see if there is any offensive way in us, and lead us in the way everlasting. Amen.